G'day and welcome to a Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is CJ the DJ and I am your host for this week's Grad Chat. Of course, a show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs, as well as CFRC. So thank you very much to both of them. Now, if you may miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify and CFRC Podcast. So no excuse not to hear what our awesome students and postdoctoral fellows are doing. Today, though, I would like to introduce you to Ahmed Naguib, who has just started his postdoctoral fellowship in computing under the supervision of Dr. Hossam Hassanein. Welcome to Grad Chat, Ahmed.
Thank you very much, Colette. Great to speak with you.
And first of all, congratulations got through your PhD.
Yeah,
that's
finally.
Always a big moment, isn't it?
It was, yeah. It was a great moment, a great achievement, I guess. And it's good to stay at Queen's for a while, at least. I like Queen's and I like Kingston, so I'm glad I'm still here.
Well, that's lucky. I mean, even if it is cold, I mean, it's a little bit different from being in Egypt, which is a bit warmer.
Yeah, it's much warmer there. But I guess I got used to it. So yeah, I like Kingston, at least compared to Ottawa. I stayed there for a year before,
right.
And it was much colder, so
right.
I prefer Kingston to Ottawa.
Now, did you get a chance to go home and celebrate with your family that you've got your PhD?
Yes, so I actually defended my PhD remotely while being with my family, which was great to celebrate afterward
yes,
with them. So
lovely.
It was a great moment, yeah.
This is where technology works well for us, when you can still sit it without having to come back to Kingston to defend.
Exactly, yes.
Which is really good. Now, you mean clearly want to continue with your research because you've got this postdoc position. What made you want to stay in academia and perhaps what also got you interested in the field of computing and artificial intelligence in the first place?
So in general, I like research in general. Like I feel like doing research is more satisfying, at least to me, compared to just doing a subtask that I don't see,
the
end result of it.
Right. Because a lot of times when I think computing, I used to anyway, it's just all coding. And I'm thinking, God, there's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah. So I like coding. I've always liked coding since I was a child. I've had a computer since I was maybe 6 years old or so. Which was like I'm a bit old, so this was like early days.
Hey, you haven't seen nothing yet.
So yeah, exactly. So I liked computing in general. I liked to program since I was a child, which is good. Like my family supported me even like in choosing my education. They supported me, although it wasn't popular at that point because I did computer science, not engineering, and engineering is very popular back in Egypt,
right,
compared to computer science, at least at the time I joined university. So yeah, it was mainly my personal interest turned into education, and then I like researching stuff related to computer mm-hmm. science more than just doing a coding task, which is that's more interesting to me, like doing research.
Well, I think that's one of the things, isn't it, about research? I mean, and I imagine something in computing, you want to see what the end result's going to give you, or you see a problem. Okay, what can I do to help solve that problem? It's all very much problem solving, isn't it?
Exactly, and you actually have more control over the whole setup when you do research in a research lab. Even if you collaborate with other people, you still have more control over the whole process compared being part of a big corporate, for instance, doing a small task. You don't see all of the things included. You don't know about all of the components included in the process. Sometimes you're not even aware of the impact of what you're doing sometimes. I guess research helps you see the impact of what you're doing, compare your work to other people, not to compete, but to actually accelerate research and have results that are helpful to everyone, like maybe the environment, the society, the acceleration of the computer science domain in general.
Well, I think also with computers in general, I mean, they're everywhere, right? They're a big part of our lives these days. When I was growing up, had the big mainframes and that was it kind of thing. But now we've all got, I remember when the first desktop arrived, you were able to have a computer at home. I mean, that was unbelievable.
Yes.
Where's the on button kind of thing?
Yes, exactly.
So, whereas now it's, computers, or whether it's a desktop, a laptop, and a notebook.
Yes, you have your tablets, your watches, your smart devices at home. Yes, self-driving cars have like lots of computing power as well. So
computing is a big part of our lives, and so making sure that we've got the right people doing the research to use it correctly, of course, is a big part of that. So I'm glad that you're doing that. And before we get onto your topic, in your postdoc, continuing on what you did in your PhD.
Yes, it's somehow related. It's like what I did in my PhD is having like a framework of four main components that needs to be addressed. And I mainly focused on two of them. So in my postdoctoral appointment, I'm actually focusing on some of the components that I didn't have the chance to address in my PhD work.
So I guess we should tell people what you're actually doing, which will make it easier for them to understand what the four components might have been. So let me just read your topic. It's building trust in reinforcement learning for next generation wireless networks.
Yes.
So what were those four points that you were talking about?
So mainly we have... So let's go back a little bit. So what's next generation wireless networks in general?
Well, yes.
Because it's some main components that we need to understand before going to the four main challenges or components that I wanted to address in my PhD work. So think of like wireless networks in general as like a highway system. Mm-hmm. So the earlier wireless generations, like, you know, I'm sure you heard of 1G, 2G, 3G.
Yes, and now it's up to 5.
Yes, and now it's up to 5. So the earlier versions like 1G, 2G, 3G, and even 4G were mainly concerned with just having, like, if we're talking about a highway, like 2 or 3, you know, lanes that accommodate only cars. So these were like, when we go back to wireless networks, we're talking about only phones connected to a wireless network that needs to do voice calls or recently browse the internet or use some apps that connect to a server through the internet.
Okay, yep.
But the next generation wireless networks, which is like 5G and 6G and beyond, we have three main differences. First of all is like we have more devices. As you just mentioned, we have smart watches. We have smart appliances at home that are connected wirelessly.
Well, that's true, yes.
We have self-driving cars. Yeah. We have even, you know, robotic arms at industrial, you know, institutions.
Right.
So we have more diverse devices that are not available or accommodated in the current network.
Okay.
So that's the first thing with next generation wireless networks and its complexity. The second part is there are diverse needs for each service available or supported by the next generation wireless network. And these diverse needs have to be accommodated simultaneously on the same network, which is very complex to do.
Yeah, because you don't want to get mixed up. And I'm probably jumping ahead here because I don't want something happening for a car getting mixed up with something that's happening on my watch.
Exactly. So for instance, self-driving cars are more concerned with reliability of the connection. So if you receive an emergency message, you have to make sure that if it's sent from one end, it has to be received reliably on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
But other services, like, for instance, HD, like high definition video streaming, is mainly concerned with speed, like speed of connection, not the reliability.
Yes, not the old through, which I can never do.
Exactly. So so with every service supported by the next generation wireless networks, each service will have defined requirements in terms of speed, reliability, delay, for instance.
Right.
And then you have to fulfill all the diverse requirements of each service. The last point related to next generation wireless networks is the highly dynamic environment of the wireless network. So compared to the, you know, the wired networks that we all know about,
yes,
it's very dynamic compared to it. So for instance, you can have interference between the devices because they are both sending data at the same time. For instance, if you have a cell tower and the neighboring cell tower, there might be interference between these as well.
Right.
You have like external factors affecting the available resources. For instance, if there is a sudden event happening without like it was unplanned event, the network will be very congested. Finally, even weather conditions may affect
the network. Which we know that's affected the network a
exactly.
lot.
Exactly like a highway, like weather conditions or sudden, you know, accident may affect, you know, or disrupt the highway.
It.
Yeah, exactly.
So can I ask you a question before we go on to these other things? That was a great way of explaining next generation wireless networks. In your topic, you've got the word building trust. And I mean, I like that word, building trust. For me, though, anything that gets done it's talking about anything that gets done up in the cloud, so to speak, which to me is a little bit scary. So when we say wireless networks, what does that actually mean? Is all this data really just hanging around in the clouds? Because we always say it's up in the cloud. Or is it stored up in the satellites orbiting the Earth? What is it exactly? Where is it?
It depends on the application.
Because it's not in the wires anymore, like you said, because we're gone, because this is wireless.
Exactly. So it depends on the application. So some applications may be not going to a server at all. Like there is something called device-to-device communication. So you don't even have to go to a central, like cell tower, for instance, or a central server or the cloud to be able to communicate with someone else.
Right.
You can communicate directly. It depends on the application and the communication paradigm that you're using.
Okay.
But most of our daily live application go to a cloud at somewhere. Like, so for instance, a company may have its own cloud.
So the cloud is a database of sorts.
Exactly. So it's a
housing place.
A collection of machines.
Right.
It doesn't have to be only database, but like an essential part of it is database to save, for instance, user information, login information, things like that, history, stuff like that.
Right.
And there are other servers that will help the main application to be able to give the service required.
Okay.
So most of the day-to-day application will have connection to a server at somewhere. As I told you, like some companies will host their own servers,
mm-hmm.
or their own cloud, which is like collection of, you know, computational and memory
it's a bit scary,
resources,
isn't it? It's scary though
that
if it's
can
all
be
housed.
Used virtually and allocated virtually to accommodate the demand on that application.
Right.
But some companies actually use third party service to have their own cloud. For instance,
right.
Amazon. Like there's a very well-known thing called AWS.
Yes.
Which actually you can use to host your own cloud, and Google as well. And like
right.
most of companies now
have that.
Yeah, like provide cloud as a service. So if you don't have the capability to host your own virtual cloud that have like lots of computational and memory resources, you can actually use a third party to be able to do so.
So I think that's part of the scary bit, right?
Yes.
Third parties getting hold of your information.
Exactly.
But anyway, there's clearly some ways of security on those sort of applications. So sorry, thank you for that, because this word up in the cloud has always concerned me. Like it's just flying around there somewhere and then we get picked up again.
Yes.
That shows you how little I know about computers and data and wireless stuff. So with the work that you're doing, you explain, you know, what is next generation networks and why they're becoming more complex, because more and more, we're trying to do more and more.
Yes.
So as you mentioned, I like your analogy using like roads and things. That's a really good analogy. So thank you for that. But then let's get a little bit more about what do you mean by machine learning tech? Well, maybe you can explain a little bit, because I know in your synopsis here, you talk about machine learning for solving problems in the field. What is that? And in relation to wireless networks?
Yes. Yeah, so the main contribution of my PhD research is like saying that machine learning is great, but applying it practically in real environments, highly dynamic environments like wireless networks, is challenging. It's not as mm-hmm. easy as we imagine.
Because to me, machine learning means the machine is learning out of each time it's doing a process and getting better. Is that roughly what machine learning is?
Exactly. So machine learning has like many categories, but in general, you actually use data to train a model to be able to take decisions when a new situation happens. So for instance,
right.
you can save previous situations that happened before
mm-hmm.
and say, okay, given this situation, I took the certain decision. And given that situation, I took the other decision, and so on. And based on a long experience that you have from previous interactions,
yeah.
you can teach a machine learning agent to be able to solve a specific problem given you have enough data to be able to
yeah,
do so.
Yeah, so depending on the variables that are presented at the time.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That can be scary too, in
yes.
case something's missed.
Yeah, so the thing is, like machine learning is great, has shown lots of improvements in many domains. I can give you an example. For instance, mm-hmm. in gaming, like you can teach a computer to learn how to play a game and compete with real person players. Like,
oh, okay.
And actually you can defeat them, like a artificial agent can defeat real humans
right
in playing a specific game.
So like in chess, sometimes you see computers
yes.
playing against a person.
Exactly. That's one example. But there are like more, you know, sophisticated games right now that you can even, you know, defeat a human player
right.
in it. But the thing is, in gaming, it's much easier than wireless networks. For instance, the environment that you're using to train the agent is exactly the same as the one that you will be actually playing against a human player.
Yes, yes.
So for instance, you can give the agent enough time to... So one of the... Let's get back one step. One of the main or the popular machine learning algorithms or approaches is called reinforcement learning.
Right.
And this is actually very, very close to how we learn. So by trial and error.
Yes.
So you take an action.
Keep practicing and then it'll stick.
Exactly. You take an action, mm-hmm. see the consequences, and based on the consequence, you say, okay, that was a good action or that was a bad action.
Mm-hmm.
So in gaming, reinforcement learning is heavily used. If you give enough time to the agent to try in different situations, all the possible actions
right.
for a game, giving enough time, it will actually be perfect in,
right.
in playing that game, because the environment or the game is the same exact thing that it will be tested on. Like when
yeah.
you test the agent, if it's performing well or not, it will play the same exact game. It will see mostly the same situations and so on.
So there's a lot of consistencies and constant
exactly
work going on here. But wireless is different, isn't it?
It's different because you cannot actually train your agent in real network. So for instance, mm-hmm. imagine that you are doing trial and error in real network, and then users in the network are experiencing very bad performance based on the actions that was taken.
Right.
You shouldn't be doing so. You should do that somehow in a simulation environment or somehow
right.
similar environment
beforehand.
Offline, and then deploy such an agent in a real environment. And the simulation environment is definitely not as accurate or not as similar as the real environment. The real environment is more dynamic. It has like lots of situations that are not
reflected.
Yeah,
there's a lot more influences, isn't there, that you may not be able to predict.
The dynamic behavior, exactly, the uncertainties mm-hmm. in the real environment is higher and so on. And these differences is the main concern of my thesis work. So as I told you, machine learning is perfect in many situations, has improved the performance of many domains, but in domains like wireless networks where the environment is dynamic, it's not as easy. I don't know, like I can give you like an example of why we need to have like an autonomous way of managing our resources. For instance, I can give you two examples.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Analogies, actually, not examples. So for instance, if you have a traffic light, so instead of having like a preset timers for that traffic light, you can actually manage it using an intelligent agent that takes decision to switch from red to green or green to red based on the number of cars
on the
street, instead of wasting resources. Like,
yeah.
And then you get a signal or a feedback, for instance, in terms of the average wait time of each car in the traffic light.
Right, right.
And based on that, you keep learning and improving your decisions.
Which would make so much sense, because nothing worse than sitting at a traffic light because it's red for you and there's no one coming the opposite direction. You're thinking, can it not just realize there's no one else here? And so if it can, or if there's a long queue at a certain time of the day, that one stays green longer to get them through.
Exactly. So having machine learning will make this process autonomous, and you don't have to wait if the way is clear. So it will mm-hmm. turn into green and you will proceed with your destination.
So that's actually, because I know, isn't there, it used to be in some of the bigger cities, there's people sitting in offices and they're watching the traffic. And if they can see there's a lot, for instance, using this analogy, see a lot of traffic, they can change the system. But that's done manually.
Yes, exactly.
So now this is trying to do it where we don't have to have someone sitting and watching, because they can't be watching every intersection.
Exactly. That's exactly the analogy that reflects the dynamic behavior in wireless networks. And like, you know, more devices, more services, mm-hmm. dynamic conditions. So that's why you cannot do that on your own. You have to have like an autonomous way to manage all of these resources. And the second example is like, as you have multiple services at the same time, you may look at it as if it's a hotel, you know, room allocation system.
Right.
So you don't want to waste your available spaces by presetting them to, for instance, regular guests, VIPs, and conference rooms. For instance, if you have like a conference that's very big, you can use the whole space. But like if you have two events happening simultaneously, you can do the resource allocation in a different way by, right, you know, having two conferences at the same time using the same space.
Right.
So dynamically allocating resources.
Right, and configure it accordingly.
According to the demand.
So you're maximizing every space available.
Exactly. That's exactly what we need in wireless networks as well. You have like limited resources. Mm-hmm. You have like bandwidths, which is like some frequencies that you can transmit signals on, and this is limited. So you want to maximize the use of the available resources and at the same time, you know, fulfill demand that you have in your network.
But in that particular one, for the hotel one, that still requires someone inputting, we've got this many people coming, they need this many rooms, da da da. And so if person inputting is off, doesn't do it correct, that could really stuff up the system, couldn't it? Which would then you have, oh, it's been double booked. This room's been double booked.
Yes. So it doesn't have to be a person in this case. So mm-hmm. it's still
it's more of an algorithm that gets put in.
Yes, exactly. Intelligent algorithms that based on the demand, it will take the decision. And then if the decision is taken, so this resource is already allocated and it will be seen to everyone on the system. So you cannot double allocate the same space if possible. The same way in networks, like there's something called a scheduler, for instance, that will actually, based on the demand, it will allocate resources to users. And on a higher level, there is like something called slicing.
Which is?
So slicing is mainly an emerging paradigm that facilitates having multiple services to be supported on the same infrastructure or on the same network.
Okay.
So you will have video, high definition video streaming, mm-hmm. you will have virtual reality gaming, you will have video calling, you will have whatever emergency related services at the same time, but you have an extra burden of allocating resources the users of each service.
Each one.
Instead of just allocating resources to all users available. So having service in consideration or taking services into consideration is much needed because each service, as I told you, has its own requirement and you have to take each service requirement into consideration.
So, I mean, I guess ultimately you're trying to make more processes easier, help companies in what they do, help us as the general public in our day to day. I mean, what are you trying to look at specifically right now? Because you can't do it all in one go.
Exactly.
So what area are you looking at in particular?
My research helps industry and end users at the same time.
Okay.
So by helping industry, I mean making them able to deploy machine learning and especially reinforcement learning algorithms in practice in real networks by addressing four main challenges. The first challenge is generalization. And by generalization, I mean making reinforcement learning work in different environments.
Okay.
As an analogy, if you train a self-driving car in downtown Kingston, it will not have the same performance if you go and deploy it in downtown Toronto, right?
Because it's not used to having so much traffic around it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it will struggle in Toronto because
yes.
it was trained on a different environment.
Quieter road.
So yeah, one main objective of my work was like to have more generalizable algorithms.
Okay. Yes.
So instead of having one algorithm custom to a specific situation, no, having algorithms that can generalize even if the situation is a bit different.
Right.
You can do that in different ways, but I don't know if it's best thing to talk about the details or the specifics of the algorithm.
Yeah.
But yeah, the main thing, similarly in networks, you want RL models that are trained on one network setup to generalize or perform well, even if the network setup changes.
So there's a basic model you want it to follow.
Yeah, so this model should be like somehow what we call foundation model.
Foundation, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah, that
yes.
can deal with different situations, mm-hmm. even if these situations were not seen before. One way of doing that, I can quickly give you an example. One way of doing that, instead of just focusing on what action to take given a specific situation, you can also teach the model to learn how to learn.
Right.
If you see a new situation, how to learn quickly. Instead of just how to learn this specific problem or yeah. this specific situation.
Right. So if this happens contrary to what you're used to, consider this.
Yes, exactly. And that's called meta-learning. And
right.
there is also transfer learning that you make use of previous knowledge
right.
in a way or so.
Yeah.
The second main problem. So the first one is actually something that I proposed multiple, you know, approaches to solve this or to address this problem. And I have like multiple publications about it. The second challenge is safety.
Mm-hmm.
And safety can be, you know, summarized in preventing harmful actions or decisions.
Right.
To give you an analogy, as usual,
I love analogies.
I try to prefer some analogies. So to give you an analogy is like if a person is learning how to ride a bike, you shouldn't be allowing learning by crashing into a wall, for instance.
Right, yes.
This action shouldn't be allowed.
Like, yes.
You have to prevent or restrict actions that's harmful to that person, right?
Right, yes.
Similarly, you don't want to take actions in the network that will lead to bad performance to end users. If
right.
you're, for instance, I will give you an example from networks. If you're Prey, I'm not sure if you're familiar with like VR headsets and
stuff like that.
So, if you're playing a VR game, virtual reality game, and the delay is very high, that will be very bad experience to the person playing the game, because it will lead to a noticeable delay between the user movements.
Right.
And changes that's happening in the digital environment that the player is seeing.
Right.
Which actually, it will lead to discomfort and motion sickness somehow.
Yeah, because it's like a time lapse, isn't it? And it's not happening at the time you're expecting.
So it will be less realistic or immersive in general, which is something that you don't want to have. And that's what I'm telling you about. Like, so safety concerns doesn't have to be harmful or like physical harmful thing. It in network, it mainly is related to performance. So you don't want virtual reality gaming users to experience high delay, for instance.
Right.
So you should restrict or prevent, if possible, if you can, actions that lead to such a situation.
Right.
And there are like multiple ways to do that, and they all fall under the umbrella of something called safe reinforcement learning approaches.
That makes sense. I mean, you want to be learning the right stuff, not the wrong.
Yes, and limit.
Because you want to get a good habit, not a bad habit, not teach a bad habit.
Exactly. and while habit. Like, so sometimes it's okay to take bad actions. In the example of gaming, it's okay because you don't care about like the training.
Right.
You just want the agent to take the good actions when it's really playing the game. But like if you're training it to play a game, you can try all the possible actions. No one will be harmed, right?
Right.
But if you're talking about real network,
then
the end users will be harmed in
a
way.
Which you don't want.
Yeah, you want to limit risky actions.
That makes sense. So that was two.
That was two. And that's also the second aspect that I mainly focused on. So I also did some work on that, and I published multiple papers on that aspect.
That's great.
The two last challenges were actually, you know, surveyed, and like I did my my own vision of how to do that, but I didn't have like
the time to get
the time to do like real experiments and have results on them. But I'm actually currently like more interested in doing so. So the third one is robustness, and robustness means adapting to unpredicted changes or uncertainty in general.
Right.
So for instance, if weather conditions changes suddenly, if an unexpected event happen in the vicinity of a cell tower, you should be able to deal with such unexpected change in a way that will be seamless to the end user.
Right.
For instance, if you're using Google Maps, that's an analogy as well. You don't want to have a failed system if there is a detour suddenly that's not updated on Google Maps. So you should have an option what to do in this situation instantly in real time to be able to go to the right road to go to your destination instead of wasting your time and having some, you know, time going to a wrong road and doing a U-turn.
Constantly
like
do because I don't believe it's going to take me to the right place.
Yeah. So yeah. You need to have like you need to handle unexpected changes.
Yep. And the fourth one?
As the first one is explainability, which makes total sense that if an AI agent is taking decisions, you need to understand why
it
took such a
decision
given such a situation. For instance, as an analogy, if you go to a doctor that you are 100% aware that they are using an AI agent to give you a treatment, you want to understand why this treatment is offered to you. Because if you don't, you will not trust it, right?
Correct.
And that's where trust word come from. You need to trust the AI agent's decisions.
That it's made all the predictions possible, taken every variable into consideration, and this is the best option. Now.
Exactly. So similarly in networks, network operators like whatever version, Bell or whatever, needs to understand why this decision was taken given a specific situation, otherwise they will not trust having machine learning in general.
I think it's interesting because there's so many new variables coming all the time And again, I guess part of this reinforcement learning is also picking up new variables. So because you talk about trust and robustness and stuff like that.
Yes.
Great. But things are changing every day. And can we predict or can we make such predictions?
Things are changing from the technology aspect and from the data aspect as well. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure which one are you interested in?
I don't know.
I
just know that things are changing all the time. I mean, some of these AI things, I'm thinking, well, technology has changed so much so quickly that can we make all these predictions today, knowing that even in 1 week's time, there's something else that's come that we weren't aware of that suddenly cropped up.
Yes. So yeah, like one, if you're talking in terms of things that may change in our environments and the technology that's actually that's used in networks, my work, like the four components, is actually can handle or
so
accommodate
it'll
these
keep
changes.
Learning as it's going along.
Exactly.
It's not just learning from this moment in time. It will continue to learn.
Exactly. So reinforcement learning is actually helpful and very handy because it keeps learning based on the dynamic, you know,
right.
state of the network. So if changes happen, it will adapt and change. But like our work is mainly try to limit harmful actions.
Yes.
Try to generalize to any new situations that you haven't seen before and so on. Try to explain the decisions that you have taken. And also try to be able to adapt to any uncertainties. So this is handled in the four components. But there is also another thing that's changing, the technology itself. For instance, mm-hmm. now we have generative AI, like ChatGPT, for instance, is just
yes,
an example.
Yes.
So if companies start to use such black box tools to get answers, to help customers, to whatever, like manage their systems, this is also a thing that needs to be...
Well, we know they haven't always...
addressed as well.
Yeah, haven't always worked correctly. I mean, there's been some fact-checking that haven't been quite factual.
Exactly. And if you think about it, most of the components I talked about today will also apply to...
Right.
Something like ChatGPT.
Right.
You need to make sure that the answer you received is explainable, why it took such an answer.
It's interesting because if you look at medicines and things, the people who pass certain medicines to go for us to be able to use, they go through very rigorous framework to say, yep, that can go on the shelf now to be used. And my concern is with technology is we're putting things out there that haven't really necessarily always been tested properly. And then some of those generative AI things as a classic example of that. They're not actually giving the correct answer. And yet they're out there for us to use.
I totally agree. And that's why actually my real title, thesis title is Trustworthy Reinforcement Learning. And still
right.
all of these new technologies like ChatGPT, which is something called large language models, which comes under like a bigger umbrella of generative AI, needs to be safe, needs to
yes.
be resilient,
yes.
needs to be controlled in a way or restricted in a way that will not harm the end user. Because it may harm, like there have been instances that people have committed suicide
mm-hmm.
by dealing or chatting with
the wrong...
an AI agent,
yeah,
which is...
And not understanding the difference.
Really, really sad. The main problem is like researchers are mostly interested in doing or accelerating, you know, the development of the existing tools
without worrying necessarily about the dollar factor coming from this new
yes exactly
new
you
technology
have to, you have to also embed like there are I don't want to say no researchers do consider safety aspects but there are some but not as much as people who are just trying to accelerate the development of the technology.
Right, yes. Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, like, for instance, the European Union is doing some acts, like acts to restrict
to check
or limit
or some checks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The use of AI in Europe in general. So similar acts are, I guess, are now also showing up here in North America in general.
Right, right.
So this will also restrict how companies use AI in their end products that deals with humans, at least.
Well, that's good to know because we do want those safety checks. And as an end user, I want to know that what I'm hearing, seeing, whatever, using has gone through all the checks and balances.
Yes.
So good luck with all of that. Big project.
Yeah.
Glad you're on it,
yeah,
doing this. And best of luck with all of that. And I do thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Colette. It was great. talking to you.
That's good.
Thank you.
So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat sadly comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download the show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CFRC Podcasts. Just type in Grad Chat. Until next week, this is EJ the DJ, signing off with a big hooray.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.